Om Shanti. Good morning and welcome. My name is Manda, and I, as you can probably tell, I'm originally from India, but I have been living in England, the UK, for the last 44 years, and I've been with the Brahma Kumaris for the last 37 years. And it's not the fact that I've been with the Brahma Kumaris for 37 years that qualifies me to sit here with you. The only thing I think that qualifies me to sit here in front of you is my own desire and my wish to share my own spiritual experiences. And I think the only thing that we can share with each other is our experiences. There's some sort of understanding, of course, that forms the basis of our experiences. But ultimately, whatever it is that we know with the intellect, whatever it is that the rational side of us resonates with, ultimately has to, in a sense, be cohesive with our own intuitive, instinctive, and experiential side too. And I know that for myself, this is what spiritual journey is all about. Strangely enough, when we human souls are here on the physical plane, in the physical body, as time goes by, we lose the awareness of that. I think that's something that you've understood over the last 2 or 3 days, I hope. But there comes a point in time where we actually have to return to our own selves. Return to ourselves, not as in the personality that we have developed over this period of time, but the original spiritual self. And that's what, and in order to be able to do that, in a sense, to be whole spiritually, both aspects of ourselves have to be in balance. That is, the left side, the right side, the masculine and the feminine, they actually have to work in harmony with each other. And ultimately, I think, and my own experience is that that is what the spiritual journey is all about. To return to that balanced or holistic spiritual state of being. And as part of that, I think, is also our own relationship with the world of matter, our own relationship with this world as we see it outside of ourselves. And today we will explore that a little bit, to some extent. It's a huge subject, and I don't think an hour does it really justice. So let's see how far we go. But first of all, I was asked to just give you a little bit of more of a background to this place, because when you come here, you really actually come to the heart and the core of the Brahma Kumaris. Because this is the place that Brahma Baba arrived at in the early 50s, when the community had to basically leave Pakistan after the partition between Pakistan and India, because the community was of the group of people who were Hindus. And whilst during the war, during that partition period, they stayed in Pakistan, but afterwards they realized that they have to go to India. And so Brahma Baba took everything he had and all the people that were with him, something like 200-300 people, some individuals, some families. He basically brought them all here. And when they first arrived here was the central part that you see. I mean, even since I've been coming here, everything has been refined and made to look more beautiful, and you see more marble everywhere and all the concrete everywhere, and it's become much more kind of up to date, if you like. May not be in the Western standards, but it's still, when you come here, you're not, when you come to the Brahma Kumaris, you're not really in India, in one sense, because it is a very different place to India as you generally see it. So Rama Baba came here with this group of people, and it was after a very short period of time that basically all those 14 years that everybody lived together, it was Brahma Baba's income and his wealth. And maybe some people brought a little bit, but mostly everybody came with the clothes that they were wearing, because there were a lot of objections from their friends and relatives and the local community, and so they just had to flee. So that's how they left. And so when they first arrived here, they soon after ran out of money and didn't really have enough even to feed the group that was here for their next meal. And it was really Brahma Baba's faith. The reason why you see so many pictures of Brahma Baba are a few, but one of which is that Brahma Baba really played the role of a father for this group of people. A father, a friend, a teacher, a guide. And it was when he used to speak spiritual understanding or knowledge, for them the experience was as if something else, someone else was taking over. And there was another power that was relating some of these very way out ideas, quite different actually to Hinduism. And so often we get asked the question, are you a branch of Hinduism? And so in one sense, we're not really, because some of the ideas are very, very controversial to the understanding and the philosophy of Hinduism. And so when Brahma Baba spoke, though, what really resonated with people was who was speaking and then what was being said. Who, in the sense that their sense, their experience, and many of them found themselves in a state of trance. When they would come in front of Brahma Baba, you've experienced this drishti, right? Vision, spiritual vision through the eyes, and he would look at them and they'd be gone, as if they would be transported to another place, another dimension, another spiritual dimension. Sometimes they would be in that state of consciousness for days. And it was in that trance-like state that many of the things that Brahma Baba was speaking was becoming a reality for them and formed part of their experience. So Brahma Baba was a very unique instrument, an instrument that shared insights that resonated with them. And often when we get asked the question, in fact, only recently, just before I left the UK, I live in Oxford. We have a retreat center in Oxford, so I'm based there. And we had a couple of people from, what was the order? Some religious order, I forget now, came from. And they asked me, do you have scriptures? Do you have a scripture that you read? We don't really have a scripture as in a sacred book that we read every single day. But we do have a body of knowledge and teachings, again, some of which you've been exposed to already. And we read the teachings or understanding that came through Brahma Baba. And this understanding was very natural, very automatic. And in fact, the room, history hall, where you must have gone first, was the only largest room that existed when Brahma Baba was here. In 69, when he passed away, and we really think of him as someone who kind of achieved his highest spiritual state. And for us, the feeling that his spiritual state today inspires us to become like him. Not just like him as in copying him or treating him as some sort of a guru, Because as you already have discovered, we don't have any rituals. We don't worship, we don't have mantras, we don't have scriptures, we don't have any of those things, but yet you see the picture of Brahma Baba. But more as an inspiration for the life that he created. But he plays a very important role. A, as this instrument of another power, another energy, the supreme if you like. But those teachings that came through him, he played this amazing role of making those teachings practical reality in his own life. And in doing so, he taught us how to do that. So what we read in the morning, the teachings, which we actually call the Murali. Murali literally translated means the flute. The flute as in the flute of music, but the flute of knowledge, the flute of understanding. And as people hear this, and really for me even today, after 37 years, I can hear what I've been hearing for that long, and somehow as my understanding deepens, my heart can still today jump or miss a heartbeat of some kind of understanding that takes home inside myself. And that happens not just as a piece of information, because it's spiritual understanding can't be used as a piece of information. Information, knowledge, facts, wisdom, all of those aspects are there, but spiritual understanding in a sense bypasses all of that. The only thing that can allow us to really resonate with spiritual understanding is our own practice and experience of the spiritual self that are. And so as we hear the teachings that Brahma Baba spoke, which really came as an inspiration to him, as if doors open, your intellect opens, your heart opens, and as if pennies drop, as if there's some secret that becomes revealed to you. And part of that, I think, is really our relationship with this world of matter. I would say that generally in spirituality, there are two schools of thought. There are those who believe that to live a completely spiritual way of life, you have to leave the world, you have to leave this world, you have to leave a social life and completely engage yourself. And there's a huge community like that in India, as you know, who are called gurus or sadhus or sannyasis. And I think there probably are in other schools of thought as well, where they completely leave everything and go and either live in isolation, live in jungles, live off life as it offers them. And so they abdicate their responsibilities and move away. Then there's another school of thought that feels, feels that life and engaging with life and being absorbed in life and giving to life in itself is spirituality. So, but there are two opposite ends of the spectrum. But what I understand and what I find very fascinating to explore for my own self on my spiritual journey is that I feel that there is a middle ground and a coming together of both of these. It's not one or the other. So when we have highest, deepest, profound spiritual experiences, it's not that we have to leave the world. It's not that we can't engage with life. But how can you bring those experiences here and engage with life with deep understanding, wisdom, and power? And therefore, bringing that spirituality here in our relationship, in our world of matter. And I really think of this as building a relationship with the world of matter, which first of all means our own physical body and my own world that I live in, and then the world around me. And this is actually quite a big thing. It's not a small thing to think about this and explore this. And Brahma Baba very much played this role of teaching teaching us how to be able to do this. And when I say a relationship, I think, and I include myself even today, that I go through phases where I can have a relationship with something and someone and life. And there comes a time when I become dependent and subservient and lost in this engagement. And when we do that, then we don't have a relationship. And I would say that pretty much all of us are in a relationship or some sort of dependency and subservience with life, with people, with our world, and including our own physical body. And so when you hear about us telling you again and again and again, and you think these people are repeating themselves, but we are, because when you understand that you're a soul, it's not enough. It's not enough to just hear it once. And for me, I know every single day I hear it. Every single day. And as my practice deepens, as my desire to practice more is heightened, the more I want to hear it. If or when I don't practice, and when I'm not able to practice, then when I hear it, I don't want to hear it. Do you know what I mean? It's like I think, please don't tell me that. And it's not because it's being repeated to me. I don't want to hear it because I know I'm not doing it. And I'm being faced with a mirror that I don't want to look into. But then when I really practice, when I'm really able to be so conscious, then I can see when someone reminds me, I think, yes, great, I can go deeper. I can be more subtle. I can be more profound. And so these teachings for us form our understanding, not just in this moment, but today we're exploring the subject of the drama of life, the cycle of drama. And we all know that in life, in world, everything renews itself from time to time. Nothing ever remains the same. Do you know anything that's ever been the same? Nothing. Nothing ever remains the same. Everything is always changing. The only place that it doesn't often change is in here. And when changes happen out there and they don't happen in here, then we're in conflict with that change. And it's that conflict that causes us pain and sorrow and suffering. Not the change itself. It's not the change that causes me pain, but my inability to change myself with the change that causes me pain and sorrow. And so, change is inevitable, especially in the world of matter. This world, and these are some of the secrets that we learned that came through Brahma Baba, this world is a play. All of us are actors in this play. And this play is of three things. Soul, God, and matter. These are the three things that are, this is an interplay. This life as we see it and as we know it is an interplay between these three things. We think it's just us. And we think that we're the ones who manifest everything. And as time goes on, shape and form of matter changes. But it never actually ever completely disappears. It always exists. The soul always exists. The soul is an eternal being. Yesterday I was talking to someone and I said to him, so what's exciting? And he said, everything is exciting. And I said, yes, it's true. What is it? And he said, the exciting thing is a voice, to hear the voice of eternity. And that really got me thinking, what is eternity? Where does eternity exist? We all might think, well, eternity doesn't exist here because nothing is eternal. As I just said already, everything is changing. But what's eternal behind this external physical change is I, the soul, the spiritual being. However, when we lose ourselves in this change of matter, then we change with it. We change in the sense that we lose our awareness of who we truly are. We forget that we're spiritual beings. We forget that as spiritual beings, our basic intrinsic nature is that of peace, love, joy, and power. And when we forget that, and when we think of ourselves as this, this interplay, this soul and body and matter becomes so intertwined with each other that it's as if it's impossible for us to separate the two. And when we become so intertwined with it, then matter begins to affect the soul. Affect as in we start to identify with the variations and changes, or perhaps even degradation of matter. And yet we also know that there is the law of entropy. Everything that is new one day becomes old. Nothing ever remains new. In the world of matter, everything that is new one day becomes old. And when it becomes old, generally in the world of matter, it disintegrates. It changes its shape and its form. But that, the soul, does not disintegrate because it cannot disintegrate because it's a spiritual energy. But in its disintegration, when the matter disintegrates, in a sense loses its power, then the soul, in a sense, goes down with it because it forgets itself and becomes totally identified with this matter that's also losing its power. And so in our world today, even nature, everything is in the form of cycles. Have you noticed that? After the day comes the night, and after the night comes the dawn, and after the dawn comes the night again. After Mondays come Sunday, and come Monday again. After the full moon, it loses its degrees, and it becomes less, it just becomes a line. Nature, after summer comes autumn, comes winter, comes spring, and summer again. But we also know that in the world of matter, this process is necessary. It's essential for matter to renew itself, for matter to get life back into itself. So autumn, winter sees a time of hibernation of nature, hibernation of species and animals so that they can keep themselves safe. They can come back into that energy. And then comes summer, they blossom, they bloom, and create an incredible vibrancy in our world of color and energy and beauty. And in a sense, for us, the understanding of the world in this form of a cyclic pattern. And the image actually you do see around, you've probably seen it already, around is that image. That's why it's called the world drama cycle. And for us, very much the understanding that the world begins when It's the spring. It's the springtime for matter in its original form. When the soul, and you, I think you have, we don't have that image here, but I think you've already learned about the three worlds, right? You've learned about that. You have the physical world, and you have the subtle dimension, and then you have the world, the dimension of the soul. You've learned that? You haven't heard that? Yes? No? Yes means yes, this means no? No? You haven't heard that? So, okay. So the understanding for us also is that this is a world of matter, a physical world. We can touch and feel and see and smell and taste. Whereas there's another dimension, which is the dimension called the soul world, the world of light, where the human soul resides. Now I know all the things that I'm telling you are probably going to raise lots of questions in your mind, but that's okay. It's a good thing, because then you can talk to your guides and your teachers that are here to support you. So this world, there is this sixth element. You know, we know in this physical plane of the five physical elements: earth, water, fire, ether, or air and ether. Then there is the sixth element, which is the spiritual element, the element of light. It's that element that scientists haven't yet quite managed to make a journey there. Stefan, have you quite made a journey there yet? No. They're trying to, and they're getting it, but they haven't quite made that journey there because it is beyond the five physical elements. And it can only be perceived when we ourselves go beyond the consciousness of the five physical elements. And it is that element that we know as the Brahma element, that you've heard about Nirvana. Nirvana means no sound. Dimension without sound. A place of light. This we think of as the home of the soul. And actually, this is where we attempt to go when we're practicing meditation. The ultimate practice of meditation is to become aware of yourself as this incorporeal spiritual being. And with the power of your thoughts and the power of your mind, to take yourself to that place. A place of absolute peace and light and nothing else. Because that is what the soul is in its original form. Peace and light. And that soul world is a soul, it's the home of the soul. The home of all of us. Doesn't matter where we come from in today's world. We don't know what culture, what country, what religion, all of us are residents of that place. And that's a powerful thing in itself. And this in itself reveals to us all the dichotomies, all the discrepancies that we see in the world today. It's all generated and created by matter. There's nothing wrong with it. The real power and beauty is to become aware of that space, that place, that home that we all come from, and to bring that consciousness onto this plane, to create a world of harmony and a world that is known as a place of truth. Not just harmony between each other and all of us, but harmony with ourselves and matter. Right now, forget relationship, there's no harmony. In fact, as human beings, what we're really doing is abusing nature and elements. We're abusing it out of our own greed, our own ego, our own need for possessiveness and attachment. And that's why we see today's world as we see it. Pretty much hell. And India is a really good example of that, because here in India you see everything completely raw, as it is. It's not happening behind the scenes only, it's happening right before your eyes. For us in the West, We can often hide behind things, and things happen behind closed doors and curtains, and everything is perfect on the surface. Beautiful. We love it like that. And so, this soul relationship of the soul, so the soul, the cycle of the world drama is that originally all souls come from the soul world to play their part here on this physical plane. And we wear this costume, the costume of our body. Now I'm telling you the theory, but actually I don't entirely feel completely comfortable telling you the theory in this way. Because this theory I can tell you over 7 days, taking 2 hours each day, and actually really recognizing the profoundness of this understanding. Just this very simple thing that all of us are drama, all of this is a drama. We all come from our home to play our part. We wear this costume of the body and play our part here. Just contemplate for a moment the implications of that in your life. You're an actor playing a part. Everybody else is an actor playing their part. You think, that sounds all right. But if you were to really get that and live that, what would that mean? You would be free. You would be free from yourself. You would be free from everyone else around you. You would be free from the scenes that occur in front of you. Because it's a play. We're all acting. And within a play, everyone has their own role to play. I have mine, you have yours, you have yours. Doesn't matter. Good, bad, indifferent, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. But it's a play. And you learned about karma yesterday also. So this simple understanding, actually, the implications are huge of this understanding. So, for us, the understanding that the soul comes down here on this physical plane to play its part. And in the beginning, when we first come, when the souls, first lot of souls arise, it's what we call the world of heaven, paradise. But not just as we know it, but this, there is something special and unique about this world of paradise. And its origin, and its power, is its power of truth and purity. Now just imagine for a moment that you, and you can practice this now as I speak, you are a soul, spiritual being, thinking, living, conscient energy. And you come, you're just arriving, you're making this descent down onto this physical plane. And you are about to enter this costume. This is your seat, and you arrive, and you say, this was ready. I mean, this is not how it happens, but let's say for our own practice of right now, you arrive and you sit inside this physical body. You know exactly who you are. You know exactly what this body is. You know exactly what you're seeing. And in this state of consciousness, you are that pure spiritual being relating to this world of matter. A time when matter is new. It is also in its purest, in its fullest extent. And in when matter is pure and the soul is pure, And when the soul has a relationship with the matter, it doesn't abuse it. The soul doesn't need to pretend to be anything. It doesn't need to own anything, to have an identification or have an identity. It doesn't need to possess. It doesn't need to force. It doesn't need to control. It doesn't need to abuse, manipulate anything. It just is. And it recognizes matter as it just is. And it recognizes it as a tool to express itself. I am, it is, and you are. And this creates an incredible amount of harmony. This is the harmonious world of purity and truth. There is purity in the soul, there is purity in the matter, and in a sense, time. And this we actually recognize as a time of the golden age. And in Hindi, it's actually a very beautiful term called Satyug. Satyug means the age of truth. Sat means truth, and yug means age, which we loosely translate as the golden age. We translate as the world of heaven, the world of paradise. Why even today it is so important for us as yogis to build a relationship with our matter, this matter and this matter, is because it's this relationship that makes us whole. So the first part, or when we first come down onto this earth as souls, is this pure, incredible relationship that we have with the world and with ourselves and with each other. And it's the world of purity and the world of truth. But, as I said already, the law of entropy, the moment matter comes into existence, its law of entropy applies. So slowly and slowly and slowly and slowly, while we maintain genuinely in one sense this awareness of ourselves, but very, very slowly, the world of matter, we begin to notice the world of matter. Just notice it. In the beginning, we don't notice it. We notice only who we are. And we're just being, not even noticing as in giving it a definition or giving it language or giving it anything. It's just being. And so this harmony that exists with everything is incredibly powerful. But as time goes on and this law of entropy begins to take place, we enter into the second phase of our world cycle, if you like, which we call Silver Age. So it's still the world of paradise, but it's now beginning to become a reflection of that world of paradise. And we're still aware of ourselves as spiritual being, but slowly and slowly and slowly we begin to become more noticed. We begin to notice the world outside of us. We notice the beginning of, in a sense, awareness of matter. And then there comes a time when we actually quickly slip into a consciousness and the awareness that we are matter. We begin to, and so that is the end of marks, the end of the Silver Age, which is called Treta Yuga, where beginning of dichotomies start, but very, very gradually we don't even notice them. And then that's in a sense halfway through the cycle, if you like. And then marks the beginning of what we call the Copper Age. It is where we forget, we totally and truly and pretty much completely forget that we're spiritual beings living inside this physical body. And we are these mortal beings. We make ourselves these mortal beings. These mortal beings that now then need to protect themselves, defend themselves. And so in that protection and defending, we need to employ some methods. We need to employ some tactics to look after ourselves. I'm not talking now anything external, I'm talking just in here. This is where the birth of ego takes place. The birth of attachments and possessiveness. Belonging, ownership, identification. The birth of anger and frustration. The birth of greed, where boundaries come in. The golden and silver age, there are no boundaries. Everything is everyone. Everything belongs to everyone. And everyone belongs to everyone. In the sense that, although there will be a life of units of families, but there isn't this kind of hanging on. But when we become what we say body conscious, have you heard that term already? So when we become body conscious, that's when this negativity starts. And of course, as you can imagine, then it's only downhill from there. Because the more we get angry, the more we're faced with anger. And the more we're faced with anger, the more we get angry. Because we need to protect and defend, preserve ourselves. And so this cycle continues in this way, where everything just goes down and down and down. But in a sense, where at the top is, in a sense, the highest form starts to change and diminish, and when we're at the lowest point, halfway, lowest point of body consciousness, but then that lowest point starts to become, starts to increase, and we finally enter into a state that we call, a phase of time that we call Iron Age. Again, in Hindi, it's a very good term, Kaliyug. And actually, at the beginning of the Copper Age is the birth of religions. There are no religions. There is no religion in the Golden Age, in heaven, in paradise, because there is no need for one, or any, for that matter. But when we become body conscious, when we lose ourselves, then we need some spiritual power. We need something to remind ourselves of who we are. And the birth of religion, as we think of it, but different religions comes into play. And those religions, then actually, they don't actually bring us together, but what do? They divide us. This philosophy is better, and actually, all religion, at the root of all religion, they all share truth. They all bring messages of truth. And they all have a role to play in our world. I'm not here to say this is right or that's wrong or this is better and this is not better. Absolutely not. Because there is a need for religion when we begin to lose ourselves. But you know what religion or dharma in Hindi means? A righteous way of life. It doesn't mean rituals and worship, and they're just methods, again, that we adopt to create this correlation between what happens here and what happens out here. When you are doing your rituals, whether you're chanting or whether you're doing, you know, whatever, candle lighting or lamp lighting or reading of scriptures or whatever, when you are doing, you are occupying your mind spiritually. You're occupying your mind in doing something that takes you beyond the mundaneness of life. This is essential. Essential. And because we start to identify our physical with our physical body, and therefore I have an opinion, you have an opinion, and you know, and I know, and we all know. So we all need to be able to identify with something. So different religions come into play, and they bring different messages. And as they come, they all, Christ, Abraham, Buddha, they brought absolute messages of some sort of truth. But as time went on, everything again loses its essence. And as we know today, all religions, we know there are byplots of all different religions now, because even within religions there are different belief systems. So you can just see where we're heading. And so there comes a time when we're in a place called the Iron Age, the Age of Darkness. But more importantly, it's called the Age of Ignorance. Ignorance of who we are. But I have to add at this point, nothing is anyone's fault. Everything is just as it's meant to be. No one can help this descent. No one can prevent this descent. It's just the way it is. It's nature taking its own course. And it's a question of really recognizing that. And this is a big lesson. To recognize nothing is anyone's fault. Nothing is my fault. In the sense of blaming and accusing, because when you blame and accuse, you abdicate your own responsibility. But when you recognize, okay, though so it's meant to be who we are, here we ended up here. But we ended up, didn't just get born into this, we're part of the creation of this. And when I say this is a role of this is a play, interplay between these three things, soul and God and matter. I haven't mentioned God yet, but I have. When the role of religion begins, where we start to look for something that we once had, that's what the role of religion is, to take us back to the awareness of who we truly are, because we forgot. We forgot. And the more we forget, the further we go from ourselves. And so for us, the Brahma Kumari is very much the understanding that there has to come a time when the Iron Age and the Golden Age have to come together. In the sense that the Iron Age comes to an end and there is the beginning of the Golden Age. And we see this time as the highest, the most spiritual time. It's time to wake up. It's time to recognize who we really are. It's time for that cycle now to turn. And in a sense, what we're doing, I think of it like this actually, that when what we're doing when we're meditating, when we're practicing deep soul consciousness and God consciousness, we're hibernating. We're going inside ourselves so deeply that in that place of going inside ourselves, we're able to come out, in a sense, and be reborn. And not reborn physically, but reborn in our minds, in our hearts, in our awareness. So, that age we call the confluence age. The confluence, the meeting of these two ages, of the Iron Age and the Golden Age. But this Iron Age and Golden Age just happens, but we have to be part of that. We have to make the choice to be part of that. That's the only time that we have a choice. Everything that happens until now, you could say, okay, it all happened, what could I have done? But now, at the confluence age, when it's time to wake up, I have a choice. Do I stay asleep and stay body conscious and live my life on the basis of ego, anger, greed, possessiveness and lust? Or do I change the course of my life? And if I choose to change the course of my life, why do I do it? Of course, it's for me, first and foremost. But actually, those who wake up, choose to wake up, become the ones who are the instruments to bring about change in the world. The power of spirituality is the highest, the greatest, and the ultimate power. No politicians, no religious leaders, no philosophers are going to bring about this shift in our world. Do you think? Do you think our political leaders are going to do that? Do you think? Can you think of any religious leaders that can do that? No. And so here, we're not talking about Brahma Baba doing it. We're talking about us doing it collectively. But in order for us to do it collectively, we all have to wake up. Wake up to the power of truth. Wake up to the power of spirituality. Wake up and stay awake. And when we do that, we have an effect on a lot of other people. A lot of other souls. We have those of you who are lovers of India and have background of India know that we have the story of the Mahabharata in India. The story of Mahabharata is a war between the 5 Pandavas, who are 5 brothers, and 100 Kauravas. And the war was to fight for the land that the Pandavas thought was theirs and the Kauravas thought was theirs. But they were given an option. Do you want a power? Do you want God? Or do you want the armies of the world and the weapons of the world? The Kauravas thought they were very clever. They thought, God, why do we want God? We are 100 and they're only 5. We want the armies of the world and the weapons of the world, and we can conquer the world. And the Pandavas said, we want God. We want the guidance of God, the power of God, and the truth of God. And it is this, needless to say, who won the war. Don't think it was 100 Kauravas. It was the Pandavas who won the war. It's a mythological story. Everything is symbolic. Everything has kind of a meaning. And the reason why the Pandavas won the war is because they had the guidance of God at every step of the way. What to do, when to do it, how to do it, what to see, what to say, what to think. And this is what the Gita is all about. The Gita is a conversation between God and his disciple, where he's guided as to how he's saying. Arjuna, the disciple, is standing in front of the 100 Kauravas. They were supposed to be brothers, but he's seeing his cousins, his uncles, his nephews in the battlefield. And he says, I can't shoot. Krishna said, consider them all dead. But metaphorically, in the sense that when we are not aware of ourselves as spiritual beings, what do we become, do you think? This is a grave. This is a grave. We're all buried in this grave. But when we wake up, then we are awake. Then we're no longer buried in this grave and lost and dependent and subservient and in pain, in suffering because of what we have around us. So this age of the confluence age, this is where we recognize that Brahma Baba becomes the instrument to give this message to us. As I said, he's not our guru, he's not our guide in that sense. But he's our big brother. He was our father. And even today, those of us who've never met him physically, but because we've heard so much about him, because of his own eyes that take us beyond what we see through our physical eyes into a powerful spiritual place, he plays an important role for us. But also, his presence keeps reminding us, don't get lost up there, and don't get lost down here. Make sure that you go up and you come back down and bring this, blend these two worlds together. Blend the physical world and the spiritual world together and make them one. As you blend these two worlds together, you learn love, you learn compassion, you learn truth, you learn beauty, you learn virtues. You learn patience. But this is essential to move ourselves away from here and go up there to be that spiritual energy that we are. And then come down and then inhabit this way, body. Then relate to it. That's a different thing. Now, I'm not going to lie to you and to tell you that that's it. You do it once and you're done. It's every day, every moment, every thought, every act, every single scene that you find yourself in. You have to keep going there, keep going there. Having said that, you can go through phases when you can get it. Then you go phases, you won't get it. But those phases where you don't get it, gets less and less and less eventually. But it's totally and completely. How much time, how much am I willing to shift my consciousness from this gross, limited, physical consciousness to a more subtle, gentle, soft, loving, spiritual energy? And doing that while I'm here in this physical body is a practice, day in and day out. I'll stop here to invite any, I know I could expect an avalanche of questions, but some of you may have been familiar with some of these things and some of you may not. There's a lot more to this understanding, but I don't think we can take up everything. I don't want to overburden you with everything today. We can take it step at a time and then you can hassle your guides for more understanding. But from what I said, if anybody has any question they'd like to ask, then fire away. There is a microphone. Does any, I will repeat the question. I don't want to scare people off from asking the question by asking them to come up here. Anybody want to say anything? Or, you've got some experts here. Sister Jacqueline, who's also been doing this for 37 years. You've got Raina here. You've got Alan. Anybody want to add anything that might be relevant? Please also add. I'm sure there is. Raina, you want to add anything? That's relevant to so far, because I know there's a lot more we can say. Drusula, Rosemary, Monica, we've got lots of people here who know a lot and understand a lot. And they've been living this a lot, actually. Living it, and as I said, I won't tell a lie. It's a journey. Tough, but powerful. Yeah, sorry. Right. That's a very good question. Excellent question. But So it's coming back together. So the question is that I said at some point that halfway we become intertwined with matter, with the body, and so negative emotions come. Yes, I said that. And then I said that we have to separate. Yes. And then I said we have to come back. So all of it is true. But when you come back after having separating, then how will you come back? You won't come back with negative emotions. Then you will really come back with spiritual emotions and feelings and thoughts and a consciousness. So what you're really doing when you come back is you're building a relationship. You have built a relationship. You're beginning to build a relationship with the world of matter. What causes conflict within us is this need of possessiveness and desire and all of those things. But when you actually, your fulfillment, your inner fulfillment comes from a spiritual practice, a spiritual experience, then that conflict is not there. Because then when you experience that, you also have to come here and experience it through the body, but also share it with others. So that's why this then coming back together is very different to how the intertwining happened and you got lost in the consciousness of the physical. And you know, I think of it, actually it's a very powerful, I think of it, the soul, the spiritual being, is this incredible power and energy of love, of peace, of all these goodness. But when you are inside this body and you think that this is what you are, what do? It's like putting yourself, putting this boundless spiritual energy into this confinement of the body. Because the body is very limited. It can only sense what it can see and what it can touch and what it can taste and smell. So when the soul thinks that this is what it is, that's all it does. And yet it has the potential. You know, you yesterday it might have come up for you. When you think of a beautiful thought, when you think about someone that you love and the extent to which you love them, be sure that they know it and they feel it. And they could be thousands of miles away from you. Think of someone that you don't like and you're kind of sending daggers at them. And be sure that they know. They feel them. But yet, when I think I am this, I confine myself to this. Right? So we also call the body a cage that the soul traps itself in. That's why when the body goes, the soul goes. As in, loses itself. Whoa, 1, 2, 3. Okay, oh, first, 1, 2, 3. Okay, so you first. Yes. Absolutely agree with you. But the question is about, I said that can a religious leader change anything? So, and people said, some people nodded and said no. But that you're saying that, you know, if everybody followed the teachings of Jesus Christ, then we could change. I agree with you. I totally agree with you. That's why I said a religious leader. If collectively we work together in absolute spirituality, then we change the world. Not one individual. That's my point. So yes, if we come together in an absolute way, not in a compromised way, because let's face it, you know, it's easy to be compromised because when our stuff comes up, then we sideline and we kind of pretend a little bit. So what I'm really asking for in that 5% is the absolute. So if we really follow the teachings of Jesus Christ and the Ten Commandments as he actually spoke them and as he lived them, then we could. But do we have the power? The power comes from God directly. And for that, I need to actually be able to make that transition into that powerful connection with the divine. And we all need to do that, not just me, but when we're talking about that 5%, what's the population of the world today? 7 billion? What would be the 5% of 7 billion? Yeah, just a bit less than a billion, really. Imagine. No, not a lot less than that. But anyway, if we were to be absolutely connected with the divine, making no compromises in that, then yes, we could change. So that's why I say we, not one individual, one religious leader. Okay. Yeah.
After what?
Yes, good question. Okay, we're going to have to be essenceful. Yeah, go ahead, finish your question. You are meant to have that karma, is that what you're saying? Well, so the question is about, are we meant to have bad karma from after the Silver Age onwards for the cycle to go on? Well, I wouldn't say meant to, because at the end of the day, we still make the choices. So, you know, karma, yes, the karma of negative karma begins from the beginning of the Copper Age onwards, right? And so, but it's inevitable. The question is, it's not, I wouldn't say meant to, but it's inevitable that it happens. At this time, when you look back, then you have to say, it was meant to happen. But now, I've got to sort it out. I've got to deal with it now. It's not that it was meant to happen. It's okay. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have any effect on me. Because it does. Because here I am, at this point in time, unhappy, peaceless, suffering, because of my karma. Right? And so I have to just take ownership of the fact that it's happened and it was meant to happen. That's why it happened. Now I take responsibility and I'm willing to change. And I'm willing to change it by whatever it means, whether it's performing good karma, whether it's, you know, having meditation. These are the things that help us transform what we've accumulated onto the soul. Okay? So last question, because I want to have some meditation at the end, yeah. Sorry? Oh yeah, the grave. The body is a grave, yeah. Yeah. Okay, yes, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And it's probably semantics and in different contexts using different words, but I absolutely agree. The body is a temple. It's a sacred thing. But it's a grave when you don't have the awareness of yourself. That's all. When there isn't the awareness of the spiritual self, then I'm dead already. From that point of view, it becomes a grave. But the moment you realize that you are this incredibly pure, divine being, you live inside this sacred thing, for sure. And the more you become aware of yourself as this pure spiritual diamond, a deity, then this is a temple. Then you're awake. But when you're awake, it's a temple. When you're asleep, it's not a temple. Then it's a grave. That's all. Yeah? Okay, well, thank you very much. We're nearly coming to our end now. Thank you for being so alert and attentive. So I've also enjoyed being with you. I'm around if anybody wants to ask anything, happy to share. So I'd like to finish now because we're supposed to finish at 12:15 and so Frank comes and shows me his face to make sure that I'm not going on, right? But I'll take this time now you're going to take from me. Yeah, 30 seconds.
Thank you. I don't want to take away from the beautiful things that Amanda's been talking about. So other beautiful things This afternoon, we're going back now to Gyan Sarovar for lunch. Then we're going to the hospital at 3 o'clock, buses there. Be a wonderful little party
not
at the hospital.
Not because we're not well.
No, because we are well. And the temples will get well looked after there. Yeah? And then on the program, there is a meditation this evening and practical meditation session with Brother Atom Prakash. On the program, it says 6 o'clock. We're aware that the program's a little tight, so we're going to make that starting at 6:30. Okay? So, program this evening, 6:30 with Atom Prakash. And one other really important thing, someone's missing this from their temple.
For their temple.
A pair of sunglasses.
For the windows of the temple.
If your temple needs some sunglasses and they're missing them, I have them. Thank you.
Okay, so what I'd like to do is a brief meditation for maybe 5 to 7 minutes, just kind of going through this cycle that we just talked about. And really it's a very powerful journey to think about for the soul. And another important thing to remember in your meditation actually is that we are going back once again. Once again, we're going back to ourselves. You're not, you know, our role is just to create a platform, an atmosphere where you tap into who you really are. We're not making anything happen for you. We're just here to provide a setting which reminds you of yourself, reminds you of your truth, reminds you of who you are. So when you're in meditation, it's just, you're there. So this is a very important aspect of the cycle. Once again, you're going back to yourself and back to who you are. Okay? So sit comfortably, relaxed, but alert. This is not the best time for meditation. Sit in the way that you're not going to become uncomfortable too quickly, because the discomfort of the body becomes a distraction as well. So sit comfortably, relaxed, alert. And as you know, we meditate with our eyes open. And if you want to do that, that's fine. If you prefer to close your eyes, that's also fine. Rest your eyes. If you're keeping your eyes open in one place, could be just looking down or choose something that's in front of you. And just gently rest your eyes. And I will attempt to speak the thoughts that I would have when I go on this journey. Om Shanti. Become aware of yourself on this seat and know that your body is held by this body, by this seat you are sitting in. And then let it go. And as you do that, take a deep breath and watch with your mind as the breath travels all the way down into your stomach and then exhale a long breath out. Let's do a few breaths of that, because your mind then becomes occupied in that. But also physically, you become relaxed. And now, see yourself on the screen of your mind as the spiritual energy, concentrated in a tiny point of light, but yet the energy of I, the soul, is extremely subtle but profound, soft, gentle, spiritual energy. And from this consciousness and with this awareness, I take myself away from this physical dimension into a place that I might call my home, the home of I, the spiritual being, not the body, but the soul, a place of complete peace, beyond this physical world that I can see and touch. Here's this other dimension. Where there is light, where there is peace, profound peace, no thoughts, just I, the being. And it is here that I also anticipate the company of God. Pure, loving, gentle, powerful being that I have always known, that I have known that I've had a connection with forever. And I find this light in front of me, as if I am beckoned by this light of love. Unconditional love that awaits me and holds me, embraces me, and I recognize myself in this presence being exactly the same, pure, loving, beautiful light. I have longed for this, and as if I now found it, but in this I see myself. The same unconditional being of peace. And it's from here that I venture into the physical plane, not the physical plane that I've known until now, but a place of complete harmony, a place of beauty, almost as if everything is translucent in this physical plane. Beautiful, soft, light. Everything is possible here. I myself, while occupying a physical body, feel like I am so translucent, as if I wear the body as a costume. My eyes sparkle, and everyone I see sparkles. Nature sparkles. It reflects back to me the beauty that exists in the soul. As I continue to explore this world, in a sense, birth after birth, time passes by. Somehow, it's as if I'm losing that original, pure, translucent awareness that I had of myself. And I just become a reflection of that. I notice how others are also a reflection, that they're not the same as they used to be, as if the light begins to diminish. And touch and smell and sound almost become pleasurable. That give me satisfaction instead of my satisfaction of being who I am. And I suddenly find myself into this physical world of matter, and I become part of this matter. And to begin with, I had a bit of relationship, but then I lose myself as I become attracted to the world of matter and people. Touch becomes essential to understand and to know and to express, instead of just see and be and know. I find that I need to employ certain ways of being to keep myself safe and protected when I become disillusioned by the world around me. I'm completely lost in this limited world of matter that is always changing. As I hold it one moment, the next moment it's not there anymore. And yet I was hoping that it would always be there, even though I knew it would never always be there. So I look for who I am, the spiritual self. And there is a lot to it that is being offered. But I know that I must find my way back to who I truly am. Always available to me is just a thought away, with me, by me, and for me. When I make God my point of reference, then my life is not just mine, but my life becomes a life service to change the world and share what I have.